Welcome to Best Picture This, where it is always Oscar season. I'm Mike.
And I'm Brian. In this show, we reevaluate every Best Picture nominee from the 21st century and decide whether to keep it or kick it from its Oscar pedestal.
Or at least take a swing at it with a frying pan, right, Brian?
Frying pans.
Do you think that that part in the movie when Monique takes a swing at Precious, that that's an homage to the Looney Tunes?
I was thinking it was an homage to Tangled.
Yeah, I mean, it could be an homage to a lot of different cartoons. Frying pans are being swung fast and loose in cartoons.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal scene in this one.
Oh, we'll talk more about it. So today's movie is 2009's Best Picture nominated Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, directed by Lee Daniels, and here's the trailer.
My name is Clarice Precious Jones. I want to be on the cover of a magazine. I wish I had a light-skinned boyfriend with real nice hair. But first, I want to be in one of them BET videos.
You're a dummy. Don't nobody want you. Don't nobody need you. School ain't gonna help none. Take your ass down to the welfare.
You're 16, you're still in junior high school, and you're pregnant with your second child. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about home? But you're gonna have to talk to somebody if you want your check, sweetie. People tell me my
life is real. Precious, I'm hungry. You plan on putting some food in that frying pan?
My favorite color is purple. I sing well, and I'm here because I love to teach.
I'm Joanne. My favorite color is fluorescent beige, and I'm here to get my GED.
Clarice, something you do well?
Nothing.
Everybody's good at something.
Precious, you gonna stand up there and look down at me like you're a woman? You don't know what real women do. Real women sacrifice. Now smile about that, you fat bitch.
Talk about the abuse in your household. You know what I'm talking about.
You sit there and judge me, and you write them notes on your pad about who you think I am. Nobody loves me.
People do love you, Precious.
Please don't love me. Love ain't done nothing for me. Love beat me. Make me feel worthless.
Your baby loves you.
Can I get that full song? Do we know who does the music?
I think we already did get the full song just then.
That's a good song.
So Monique kind of steals the trailer.
Yeah, well, I think for a good reason.
She's pretty intense in this movie. Precious received 6 Academy Award nominations. Best Picture, Best Director for Lee Daniels, Best Actress for Gabourey Sidibe, and Monique won for Best Supporting Actress. Jeffrey Fletcher won for Best Adapted Screenplay, first African-American to win a screenplay award at the Oscars.
Wow. Geez, in 2009.
Exactly. $10 million budget and made $63.6 million in the box office, 92 on Rotten Tomatoes, 76 on Metacritic, and get this.
Ovation?
15-minute ovation. At Cannes. Okay. So we're talking about people are getting skin grafts afterward for
blisters.
Those palms. They're getting, you know, knee replacements for all that standing. So coming up in the show, we will do questions, trivia, and keep it or kick it.
So when we talk about the greatest villains of all time, you often bring up Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Hannibal Lecter. These are your go-tos.
Yep.
But you've never once mentioned Monique. And I want to know why. What's that about?
That's a good question. Yeah, she is quite a good villain in this movie. Where's my food? It starts there, right? Where's my food? The slave in the kitchen, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I was not feeling that hungry after seeing those big...
The pig's feet.
The pots of boiling stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you ever had pig's feet?
Get that hair off that pig's feet.
Yeah, it's gross. Do you think that she is one-dimensional?
Well, the thing is, the movie is... So much of it hinges on her to me. I think that the first half is like really strong. And then once she gets involved in school so much and it feels kind of like all of a sudden everybody's like pals and it feels like kind of like sentimental for like a lot of the second half to me.
Yeah.
And then Monique comes and gives another hammer punch at the end with that scene with the Mariah Carey has a small role in here. But I love her in this movie. I think she's really, really good.
She's kind of good, and you could tell this accent is put on. You could tell that she's playing it up.
I thought it was good. I thought she did a good job.
I will say the very first time I saw this, I don't think I even realized that it was Mariah Carey.
I certainly did not.
So this time I knew going in, yeah. And I was very aware of it. Maybe that's why I felt like her accent was a little exaggerated. I'm like,
I thought it was great.
Mariah. So I want to talk about Monique a little bit more, yep. though, mm-hmm. because I love her in this. She's like the most hateable.
You love her or you hate her in this?
Monique as an actor, I love in this movie.
Yep.
Her character is so hateable, which is perfect. That's what you need.
Yep.
And she's like a force of evil. She makes the apartment feel oppressive and it's always dark in there. It's like a tomb.
Yep.
It's like suffocating. So you can really get a feel for how Precious feels whenever she's home. Mm-hmm. And all of that is great. Just the mood setting element of that is fantastic. The whole frying pan thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of where I have a problem.
Cartoonish?
Yeah, with this character.
Looney Tunish?
And this is a problem that I have that kind of goes through all of the movie.
Yeah.
But it starts with Monique because not only is she terrible, you know, don't nobody want you, don't nobody need you, you can't learn, I should have aborted you. She says like the worst things that anybody can ever say. And not only that, she takes a swing at Precious with the frying pan for no reason, of course. But it's one of these things where, like, Precious doesn't even see that she's swinging and then, like, happens to see in her peripheral vision last minute and ducks. She's taken a full strength swing at her head. Like, that's
Monique
a death
strong.
Blow shot if she would have made contact. So I just wonder, is it too much? Is it too much, you think?
I didn't think it was too much. I think that the cartoonishness of it is set up by all the fantasies. So there is kind of like a almost like a Tim Burton-esque feel to their house. Like it's kind of
see that.
It's kind
yeah.
of like fantasy over the top, you know. So I think that we're not meant to see any of it as like totally. It's not like this hyper realism like the Hurt Locker, you know, was said hyperbolic realism.
But this is where I gotta disagree. Because if it were just in that world, the world of their home, then I think I'd be on board with you. But it's not only all of this that I've already said about Monique, but then you also throw in the extra layer that she sexually abuses Precious. You know, she calls her in at one point, like, make me feel good or something like that. And that kind of escalation is throughout every part of this movie. You know, not only is Precious poor and illiterate and pregnant for the second time at 16, but she's pregnant because she was raped, and she was raped by her dad. Like, there's always a, it's not only this, but also this,
and she has AIDS.
Yes, and then she gets HIV later. So it's this constant escalation over and over and over again, which on this watch wore me down a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the biggest issue that I had more was about the school stuff, though. Like, I think finishing what I'm saying about what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
When Monique comes back at the end and she's in there with Miss Weiss, Mariah Carey, and she's like explaining what happened, you know, with Precious, like that she was sexually abused. We're meant to like, if she was just purely, you know, senseless, like evil mom, I think that the movie would be weaker.
So you buy it at the end when she is breaking down.
I think at the end I buy it. It still is clearly nothing that she did was justified, but the fact that she also was broken, like she's trying to convince, you know, Precious, like how worthless she is and all these other things. But for this character to be like upset about the abuse, but to kind of let it keep happening, essentially, that kind of means that she was not in a power position in that relationship.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
She was pretty much, I mean, she was probably abused too. And so I think that it just kind of shows like cyclical nature of what's going on in this household. And Monique is not like a normal person. Like she has a totally warped view of the world, just like Precious does. Precious has these, you know, wild fantasies and everything. But Monique has big problems too. And I think that although you can't excuse anything she did, I think that we are meant to, and I think it works well to have us, instead of having 100% like she's evil, there's this creeping in sympathy for her and say like, there's bigger problems than here than just, you know, Precious's victimhood.
Do you see those moments creeping in at any point in the movie other than the breakdown scene though?
Not really.
Yeah, because I don't. I think that she's vile and repulsive, yeah, and hateable for 95% of it. And then she gives an amazing monologue. And because Monique is great in this movie.
And the tone of it is different. The tone of it is different. Like that part to me is not cartoonish. That's like like the realism part.
Yeah.
Which has like, so what are we doing with this? But are you willing to say, hey, Precious, this movie keeps both of those in our hands at the same time? Sort of like
reality and fantasy, yeah, you mean?
Like are we saying like that's a problem? Or do you feel like, you know, they successfully have these clashing of styles with the realism and the fantasy part?
They do balance the realism and the fantasy well, and I do love those fantasy scenes where she imagines herself as a pop star.
She's the dancer,
and I love that how it never turns into anything at the end. Like, yeah, all of a sudden she gets a record deal,
and
like, that would be the worst possible thing that could happen in this movie. And also in other sort of Oscar-y movies that you know that I would hate, overcoming insurmountable odds, they do this thing where they manipulate us through the swelling strings where, you know, somebody delivers a monologue and the score is telling us that it's important. This movie, there's music throughout, but then when somebody is sharing something important, people shut up. The movie quiets down and like listens to what that performer is delivering. And I think that that's important, and that kind of shows an extra level of craft that lesser overcoming insurmountable odds movies would not.
Lesser overcoming insurmountable odds movies.
Yeah, that's one adjective.
Okay, all hyphenated.
Yes, okay. It's all hyphenated.
Got it.
But I don't know, in that final breakdown with Monique, I can buy that she misses having somebody in the apartment, yeah, as just a presence. I could definitely buy that she misses the power dynamic of being able to bully Precious, because then she's able to feel powerful. She misses a cook in Precious. She misses her welfare checks.
She misses those pig feet.
Everything. But all of a sudden she loves her and she wants to protect her.
I don't think any of that.
Okay.
What I saw in Monique is that she also basically feels worthless.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a viewer, you know, getting to know her a little bit better, like, you know, a little bit about, you know, what happened to her 15, 20 years ago. And now you think, you know what? She is also, although she's cartoonish villain, she's also a real person in a sense that she made some bad choices, but she was also in a bad situation. And so I think that you can sympathize when someone feels that beat up, when someone feels, she's telling Precious how worthless she is. And I think in those moments you realize that she feels the same way about herself. She's kind of like projecting some things, you know, about herself on others. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not an excuse. She can't do any of that. She's an adult, you know, she can't take anything out on a kid. That's just wrong. But, just as a side note, you know, Monique, actually was abused also as a kid by her brother. He went to jail for 12 years.
Wow.
Okay. So it, that just reading that kind of puts a little bit, there's a lot of like personal, you know, there's a lot of personal, things at stake for the movie makers also in this movie. So I'll get to a little bit of that, but Lee Daniels, said in an interview that reading the book brought back a memory from his own childhood where this young abused girl knocked on their door and said that her mom was going to kill her. And so, you know, their family was kind of involved in a situation kind of like this. He said that he was at first, he didn't really want to show this movie at Cannes because he was embarrassed at like this view into, you know, the world of like black people. He said he didn't want it to exploit black people. It was his quote. And he wasn't sure if he really wanted to go in and show this world like, you know, French white people at Cannes. Kind of interesting, like that he's torn about that. He just made a movie about this, you know, spent $10 million making this movie. And then that's how personal it felt to him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's a critic, Armand White, who's kind of, I guess, famous for being kind of a contrarian with like race. He's black also, but he said that this movie was demeaning of black American life.
Okay.
It was an quote, an orgy of prurience, unquote. He said that like light skin actors are seen as like the kind ones, like I guess the teacher and
the nurse, Lenny Kravitz.
Yep. And the black skin, the darker skinned actors are the terrors. Although Precious is the darkest one. So that, I'm not sure about that, but he said that, black pathology sells. And that's kind of interesting, but what did you take about, what were they trying to say about race, if anything, in this movie?
It's funny. We are along similar lines here. My second question to you had to, was kind of, why is Monique, Mariah Carey, Lenny Kravitz in this movie? And I was curious if you thought that Precious is a symbol for the broader black experience in America, because I kind of went back and forth, like, why do we have these pop stars in the movie? And is this a very personal story or is this supposed to be more cultural? And I think that I'm riding the line between the two, because I can make the argument, I think, that Precious is a symbol for the black experience, unjustly abused for years, uneducated, marginalized. And they
she's a slave in her own kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, that's probably the most direct one. And then there's this focus on sort of fame. That's the fantasy, the thing that's going to pull you out of poverty, where you can commodify your own experience, like Lee Daniels is talking about, and then turn it into art slash commerce. And like, that's the thing that saves you. I think that all of that's there, and the fact that these pop stars are in the movie kind of is sort of a reminder.
It's a weird layer of that, isn't it?
Yeah. But I don't think that the movie is explicitly having a conversation with that all the way through. Then there's this sequence where Precious is learning. She's in the classroom, and the camera does a full 360-degree you know, turn around her, and it's kind of superimposed all around her in the frame are important moments from African-American history. We see MLK, Malcolm X, there's segregation and desegregation. So it's kind of, she's at the center of all this. So it's kind of like the movie is having a conversation with that, but I don't think that it's, that that's all it's having a conversation with.
In a way, I feel like it's separate from the politics of it. It kind of in a similar way as the Hurt Locker is. It's not not really about the war or anything like that. This is not overtly like, about race other than a very personal, I mean, the few times that race is even mentioned in the movie is about like Precious saying that she wishes she had a light skinned boyfriend. And she looks in the mirror at one point and sees a white girl and she's like doing her hair, you know, and that without even saying anything, you realize like, it's heartbreaking that she wishes that she was white, you know, that's just heartbreaking, but she doesn't say it. And that way I think that there's some, it's a fantasy moment and it's in your face sort of, but at the same time, it's kind of understated because they're not talking about it throughout the movie, like, you know, all about it. So I think that it really does a good job of kind of getting, at least as far as I can tell, and Lee Daniels' comments kind of show that it's kind of like putting you right into that world mm-hmm. without, like, you know, making it, this is a book, this is a movie about race. So I think it walks a really fine line and does a good job of it.
But you also mentioned how Monique herself, not her, but the character that she's playing was abused. And so we have this generational element too. And she's trying to tell Precious, just go to welfare, pretty much just like me, do everything just like me, and mm-hmm. you'll just be another variation of my generation. And so that's just another echo of this kind of idea that this is institutionalized.
It's survival. This is how you survive. Because there's no other way to survive.
Yeah. Or it's just that you've been so beaten down and you've never been shown a better way, you know, because the generations above you had it so hard. And, you know, maybe some of them are damaged like Monique, and they kind of purposefully or unpurposefully damage their kids.
It's interesting, though, because there's the grandmother character.
Yeah.
Who seems to be kind of like giving a critical eye, critical air toward Monique, like, you're not being a good mom here. I'm caring for the baby and you're getting the credit. She's like, give me my wig.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a good face. Yeah. She doesn't stand up to her, but I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if it's clear in the movie. Is that her mom or is that Carl's mom or somebody else? Another figure even. I don't even know, but they call her grandma.
I guess it should also be noted that, we're probably not the best people to talk about this since we're two white guys.
I think we are. No, I'm just kidding.
So there are probably, if there's a critic who's black who felt a certain way, I think his opinion probably matters more than mine.
I think that my opinion carries a great deal of validity. I thought this was, it was a nice phrase. Mary Poles of Time said that the fantasy sequences brought the audience, quote, a joyous Wizard of Oz energy. I thought that was kind of nice. And interesting that those moments were able to, quote, open the door into Precious's mind in a way that even the author Sapphire couldn't, unquote. And it kind of made me think, like, adaptations, book to movie. So many people, you know, the cliche, the maxim is the book is better than the movie. This is one where I haven't read the book, but I think that if you're going to turn a book into a movie, do something weird with it, make it into something that the book can't do rather than just repeating what's in the book. And I think that that's something that they were apparently trying to accomplish. And at least this Time critic thought was successful. And again, without having read the book, I can't comment, but I like the idea that we're going to try to do something nothing else can do.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because this movie has a lot of narration in it that I imagine is pulled directly from the book.
Yeah.
And those are the moments that I felt like it's another form of manipulation where they're guiding me too much. Like, this is how Precious feels about learning. This is how Precious feels about her baby. So then you can kind of feel the impact more when those things are kind of put at risk.
I see what you're saying. And I think voiceovers often are problematic for me.
There's a lot in it this time.
There is, but
I mean, on this watch, I realized there's a lot in this movie.
The thing that I appreciated, though, is linguistically, you know, you're hearing her voice and how, like, it's almost hard to understand what she's saying, but it's almost like she understands so little sometimes, especially at the beginning, and then somehow miraculously she's reading at grade level, which that's part of the issues I had. Like, it's like all the lighting turns into, like, pure Hollywood and like, I don't know. The classroom stuff felt very, like, stock, straight out of a classroom, every other classroom movie you've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
It, like, descends into that kind of cliche world.
All I kept thinking about is the South Park episode where Cartman is teaching at an inner city school and he keeps saying, "How do I reach these keys?"
I did not see that, but
you got to go back and watch that one. It's fantastic.
It feels like that's kind of straight out of the Blind Side, you know?
But I mean, how interesting could it be to watch somebody learn how to read on screen? So there has to be some sort of shortcut
to say, it for me.
Okay, they learned. Now they can read.
You guys have a $10 million budget, so make it interesting.
That's a pretty small budget.
Well.
I mean, you'd need a Batman level budget to make reading on screen fun.
$200 million is the minimum to make reading sound interesting. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think so. A couple of quick trivia points, or did you have any more questions for me?
No more questions, except for there is a line in the trailer that I think is the worst line of the movie that I just Which have is? To put out there. Another manipulation moment. She says, Precious says, "Nobody loves me." The teacher kneels down, meets her eyes, and says,
"I love you.
Your baby loves you." And then the whisper, "I love you."
Yeah, it is a little much. Yeah, it probably seemed okay when it was being written.
It's
as
the
screenplay.
Oscar clip, like Oprah moment.
He won the screenplay for it.
Yeah, well.
So a couple of quick trivia points. Helen Mirren was going to be Ms. Weiss. She got a different role. Jamie Foxx was filmed and was deleted as in a cameo. So another pop star. Weird. Like were they going out and trying to get him?
I think they have to, right? I mean, that's a concerted effort to have four of them.
You would think. And Oprah was big into the promotion of it. I think that...
Or maybe that's it. Maybe there's an element of just PR to it. The more recognizable names, the more people are going
to
see it. Right?
Lee Daniels apparently was convinced this was going straight to DVD, you know? And so getting like Oprah on board, getting like, I think that probably, you know, a lot of these people said, this is a socially important movie, so I'm going to put my name behind it. And, you know, but poor Jamie Foxx got deleted. All right. Keep it or kick it, Mike.
I'm going to kick it. If you asked me in 2009, I think I almost definitely would have kept it. I kind of loved this in 2009.
Yeah.
Looking back at Letterboxd, I even said that the room got dusty a few times.
Dusty?
This time...
Classic dustiness.
It never got close to dusty on this watch for me.
Is that
me.
Because you're a cranky old man now?
No, I think it's just... The second watch revealed the cracks that were always there. I still love Monique. I do still love the fantasy elements here. But even though the movie does a lot of things right, it doesn't mean that it totally avoids that manipulation that really annoys me in movies like this. And even though I think the performances make up for it a lot of the time, they're strikes that I kind of couldn't get over.
Yeah. I think that this is really going to make me sound like a terrible, evil person. But when Gabourey Sidibe is breaking down, saying that she has AIDS and says that she basically hates life, I kind of felt like in my heart, I wasn't fully sold on her acting in that moment. And like, it wasn't quite set up right. Like when it's revealed that the father had AIDS, like my thought is, what if she has AIDS? Maybe she does. And then 20 minutes later, half an hour later, we realize that she does. And that seemed like this big shock and she's, you know, crying about it then. I don't know. There was something that was a little bit of disconnect there that, you know, wasn't, I don't know, didn't quite make it. Peter Bradshaw in The Guardian he was critical of the movie. He said that the movie catalogs a horrendous, unending nightmare of abuse and then abruptly turns into something resembling a musical. And I think that there is a little bit of that. That was probably what kind of threw me out of it. And I'm going to say that I would kick it as well. Although I think it's a good movie and I like it. I liked it a lot more the first time though. Same as you did. So I don't know. But
yeah, I still like it.
Good job, Precious. Good job, Lee Daniels. Good movie.
I am glad that we focused on the positive mostly in this episode, because I think that there's a lot of it in here.
We're trying to manipulate our listeners, I think, to keep it.
Listen, it's a lot better than The Blind Side. And
it is a lot better than The Blind Side.
Bar, it's doing great.
Monique winning Best Act, Best Supporting.
I'm for it.
Sandra Bullock winning Best Actress.
I'm not for that.
Not me either. In the next episode, we'll talk about A Single Man starring Colin Firth, who was nominated for Best Actor.
Until then, find us on social media or wherever you listen to podcasts. And for 16 years of golden takes, head over to letterboxd.com/Mike Cavalieri.
To support the show, visit patreon.com/bestpicturethis.
Thanks to WNZF and the illustrious Mark Gilliland for producing. Also, please remember to rate, review, subscribe.
Thank you for listening to Best Picture This, which was going to star Helen Mirren as well until she moved on for a bigger project.